What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 270 on this Monday, May 11th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green here with you. On a Monday, the postseason has arrived for OU softball. Came a little, not off on the bright foot last week in the SEC tournament. A quick exit. Tom and I will recap it, and we'll spin it forward. We have the bracket. How are we feeling about this team right now going into the postseason? Confidence level that they can win the whole thing, we'll discuss on the show today. Baseball in the final week of the regular season, they're scuffling. We'll get some thoughts there. And OU hoops roster rounding into form, another pretty noteworthy addition in the last week. We'll kind of do a little cleanup there for Porter Moser and OU basketball as the 2026-2027 version starting to become a little bit clearer here in the last week or so. So we'll do a little bit of that on the back end. A reminder, before we get started, subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Promo code SoonersPod60. That's all one word for listening on podcasts. That gets you 60% off a VIP membership to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Tons of content there every single day. And, of course, you have access to myself, Tom, Colin Kennedy, and Brody Lusk every day. You can hit us up and talk to us throughout the year, throughout the summer, and, of course, the football season, all that good stuff down the road. So make sure to take advantage. Be with us at Sooners Illustrated. All right, let's get into it. Tom, the postseason has arrived for OU softball. Like I said, that's where I want to start. It's an exciting time of year, the tournament, and normally this time of year is filled with just pure, excitement for OU fans, and it still is this year, but there's a level of uneasiness that's not normal because of what happened last week in Lexington. We'll go big picture with the tournament and kind of forecasting their path to trying to win a national title in a second, but let's first start by backtracking with the SEC tournament, Tom, one and done out there. Now, they had the double bye, so they were in the quarterfinals. But against Georgia, a team that they had just swept previously, they get a 5-0 lead. Everything's looking great. And then in the blink of an eye, they lose 10-5, 10 unanswered runs, one and done in the SEC tournament. Tom, obviously, you were covering the game for us as Sooners Illustrated. This, just whoa, just kind of a jarring game. I was at the Thunder Lakers game last Thursday, and I'm keeping up with it. I see they're up 5-0. I just kind of shut my brain off a little bit of they're cruising. They're probably going to run rule them. Not only do they not run rule them, they end up losing the game with 10 unanswered. Just a bizarre game. And Oklahoma in a very, a situation not very used to being in that they get to the SEC tournament, conference tournament, whatever, going back to the Big 12, and they're quickly one and done. A very short trip out there to Lexington for Oklahoma.
Yeah, definitely unexpected, but also something that's not it was out of the ordinary for Oklahoma. It was not out of the ordinary for, you look at the SEC tournament history, yeah. The last five seasons now, the defending tournament champion lost their opening game in the next year's tournament.
That's a good point.
This year it was both Oklahoma and Texas A&M, since they had that weird co-title last year, because they didn't get to play the championship game. So definitely a disappointing, run there in Lexington. Like you said, they jumped out to that 5-0 lead, and you're like, are they just going to run rule this Georgia team right now? Because, they chased Georgia's ace, Randy Rolling, from the game in less than an inning. And at that point, you're like, all right, Oklahoma's got this. They're going to handle their business. And then they just lost momentum. That Kai Minor hit a leadoff home run in the second inning to make it 5-0. And that was off of Presley Harrison, Georgia's freshman, that came in relief there. And she just shut down Oklahoma from that point forward. She retired the next 12 hitters. I think she only allowed one or two more hits the rest of the day, had a season high in innings pitched, season high in strikeouts, and Oklahoma just, they looked rushed at the plate at times. They looked like they were not settled in. Patty Gasso was talking about afterwards, this next week, now that Oklahoma had a few more days of practice in front of them, was basically going to be hell for these players. They were going to, practice them to exhaustion to get them ready for the postseason, because that's not a note that anybody really expected this Oklahoma team to head into the postseason on, a one and done appearance in the SEC tournament. We'll get into it in a second, but it probably cost them a top two seed in the field.
Yeah, definitely did. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, Patty's post game comments, because, you know, I got the press conference up on the YouTube channel for everyone to watch. I tend to do that the rest of the postseason, so keep an eye out. That's why you subscribe to the YouTube channel, turn on notifications so you can be alerted when stuff gets put up. But yeah, her tone was very, like, you could tell she's frustrated. I mean, she talked about, like, it was right in her opening statement where she gave credit to Georgia for about 15 seconds, and then it shifted to just, you know, we got that early lead, and then, you know, we just, there was this disconnect with kind of just, it just wasn't what we're used to seeing. And she talked about how we're going to go home, we're going to get it right, to your point of, like, going to hit the ground really hard in practice these last several days, and certainly this week here leading up to the start of the regional. It's a weird spot to be in, because we talk about all the time, the bar is so astronomically high, but, and they've had a great season, a historic season in some regards offensively. Obviously what Kendall Wells has done has been amazing, but we talk about the pitching all season long, and you go get a 5-0 lead on a team you've already swept. So you're thinking, like I said, I was guilty of it. Like, oh, this is going to be a run rule. This game's going to be over. And then in the blink of an eye, it was tied. And then it just, Georgia just kept going. It's just not something we're used to seeing Oklahoma do. And so it was a bit of a jarring to go one and done out there in the conference tournament. Again, a good Georgia team, but to lose that quickly out there was very, very odd. And like you said, it cost them a top two seed. The bracket comes out last night, so we'll spin it forward. They're the number 3 overall seed. Again, we talk about all year. At the end of the day, you really just want to be in the top 8, because that gets you the first 2 weekends at home to get right to Oklahoma City. Same thing in baseball. Obviously, you want to be number 1. It's nice to be number 1, but at the end of the day, it's marginal difference. Obviously, a theoretically easier path, but it doesn't always work that way with seeds. Everyone understands all that. They open up. They're at home. They have Binghamton in the first opener game, which is on Friday afternoon. Kansas and Michigan are the other 2 teams in the regional. Kansas is the other seeded team. They revealed this bracket. It took me a second to understand what they were doing with, like, the 1-8 thing. That broke my brain. That really threw me for a loop at first. But they're essentially number 14, and they're lined up – or not number 14, number whatever that would be, 30, essentially, I guess what it boils down to. Oregon is 14. That's who they would play in the Super Regionals if it got there. Tom, what do you make of their draw? What stands out to you about it? And then, obviously, the big picture question is just your confidence level that they can – do this. I mean, obviously, we know they're really good. They're still a top 3 team, but the pitching is a problem. I mean, it's been a conversation all year long. And do they have the horses to go the length of this thing and to win a national title? I think everyone's kind of asking that question right now as the tournament gets ready to get started here in a few days.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to me, because you listen to anybody who follows softball closely, and they all seem to think this is, like, the most wide open field that there's been in some time. And I think that's both good and bad for Oklahoma. Like, Oklahoma's very obviously used to being the favorite, but on a year where, you know, you still have some questions, like you said, about the pitching, you know, your hitting has faltered a little bit from some key pieces late. You know, we mentioned Cassidy Pickering's slump late in the year. You know, Kendall Wells has had her longest stretch without a home run. Part of that is because teams just aren't really pitching to her. So we'll see how the hitting kind of gets back to it this week. But when you have some of these questions about the pitching, you know, outside of Audrey Lowry, who, when she starts, she's been fantastic. It's when she's come in from the bullpen that she's run into trouble sometimes. And we saw that in the loss to Georgia as well. You know, first after, you know, Miley Guacheno, you know, again, had some trouble giving up home runs and allowed Georgia to get back in that game. And then the bullpen just kind of let it go from there. But the draw is interesting. Like, the big thing, again, you mentioned, is they take care of business. They're at home these first 2 weekends. Like, they can get to the Women's College World Series without leaving Norman. They do not have to play a postseason game outside of the state of Oklahoma, outside of the OKC metro area. So that's big for them anytime. You think that they'll handle their business this first weekend as the number 3 national seed at home. And then you look forward to that super regional where, you know, let's say it is Oregon. That's a team I think they've eliminated each of the last 2 years.
Yep.
2024, they eliminated them in a regional. Last year, they eliminated them in Oklahoma City. You know, it's there's some familiarity there. Obviously, Oregon's coach, Melissa Lombardi, you know, played at Oklahoma back in the 90s, was a longtime assistant and part of 4 Women's College World Series titles here as an assistant. So definitely an intriguing matchup, if it shakes out like that. But you know, if you're Oklahoma, I think you still have to have some confidence. And like you said, Patty Gasso is gonna, you know, run these players, you know, into the ground, you know, these, you know, already these last few days, but these next couple of days coming up before they turn the page to getting ready for Binghamton and Michigan and Kansas. So I think there's still got to be some level of confidence there, even though there's still some questions just because of how, you know, wide open this field really does seem at this point.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, I think the draw, all things considered, not bad. I mean, at least on paper, like you said, they've had a lot of success against Oregon. I'm not going to pretend to know all the ins and outs of Kansas, but you feel like that's probably a team that Oklahoma should be okay against at home, especially early, you know, early on in the tournament. And then even looking way down the road to Oklahoma City, potentially it would line up to play Florida. That'd be the 3-6 if it all goes chalk, which it's a long way from there. Feel that there are definitely worse options than that. Not that Florida's not good. They are. Obviously, they're a top eight team in their own right. But, you know, overall, not bad, it feels like. And maybe that is a, you know, freezing cold take down the road when they get knocked out by Kansas this weekend. But that's how it feels anyway. And so, you know, as far as the big picture question, I'll throw it to you. I mean, just – I'm not going to – I mean, it's hard to know, but just – where are you at with them? Like, can they win the national championship? I mean, obviously, I guess they can, but, you know, the pitching, you know, is kind of is what it is. You know, obviously I still think that they certainly can. You mentioned it's wide open this year. I guess they have just about as good a shot as anyone in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, it feels like there's always that inevitability with Oklahoma that, like, they're going to do it. And they did it 4 years in a row. And even last year, up until they were literally eliminated, you kind of still thought like they may do it again, even as young of a team as it was. I don't know what to think about this group right now, because obviously they're really good and they have lots of great players and they have great coaches, and I fully, fully expect them to be in Oklahoma City, but you just don't know. It just feels like the issues with the team or the weaknesses have just kind of been there all year, and it feels like that might burn them eventually in Oklahoma City. Where are you at just confidence level that they can go on a run and try to win a national championship right now?
I think they have the talent to – you know, win it all. Question is, can they put it all together consistently? Like you, I'm pretty confident that they will make it to Oklahoma City again. You know, again, hosting the regional at home, and then you get to the super regional where it's, you know, just a weekend series. Oklahoma has not lost a weekend series yet this year.
Sure.
And they're getting, you know, assuming they make it to the super regional, they're getting whichever team, likely Oregon, at home for a weekend series. And I think this team, you know, has the talent and the depth to, you know, be able to handle that. The question is, you know, what happens when you get into that double elimination situation in Oklahoma City? So again, like, feels like there's several teams that can win it all this year. And I think Oklahoma, you know, might not have the pitching that some of these other contenders have, but they've got the hitting. Like, this is still one of the best offenses in the country, you know, prolific, you know, hitting for average. They've been able to, you know, string some runs together when needed, but, you know, they need to get, you know, everybody on the same page and get some of these, you know, hitters out of slumps and, you know, just really kind of feeling themselves at the plate again.
It's going to be fun. I've said it before. I love this time of year, the postseason for softball. It leads right into baseball. It's an awesome time of year. It already has kind of started with the conference tournaments, but really this week with softball regionals. And OU gets to start at 2:30 afternoon on Friday at Love's Field. Kansas, Michigan's actually going to be after them in Norman down there on Friday. So they won't know who they're going to play next until after that game's over. But also they'll turn around on Saturday and try to make their way through their home regional, which they've done many, many times before, and get on to super regionals next week. And Tom will have the coverage on the website over the weekend. Like I said, keep an eye on the YouTube channel for post-game reaction from the team, hopefully after every game. But, you know, that's the plan anyway. And that's why, again, subscribe, turn on notifications, leave me alerted on your phone or whatever, right when those stuff gets put up so you can keep up. I know people like to hear from the team after the game, so keep an eye out for that this weekend.
Just a couple other quick notes that I came across when I was writing the bracket story yesterday. First time since 2017, Oklahoma has not been the number one or number two national seed.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I think they were, can't remember, their eighth or 10th that year, but they still went on to win the Women's College World Series, beat Florida in the championship series. And Oklahoma is the only national seed with a quad four loss on its resume this year. And that was that February loss to Long Beach State.
Oh, wow.
Mary Nutter Classic. So that was probably just, you know, you meant, you know, we talked about the early exit in the SEC tournament probably costing them a top two seed. That loss to Long Beach State still looks pretty rough on the resume, but
no doubt, no doubt. You wonder if they had beaten Georgia and then lost the next day, would it be different, or was it the one and done? It was stuff we'll never know, but yeah, after that Long Beach State game, feels like a long time ago. The Florida national championship year, that was the year too that they played. I can't remember, was it 18 or 19 innings, something crazy in the final series against Florida. That was an all-timer. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, but while they did have the one quad four loss, they still had the second most quad one wins in the country. Sure. Texas, the only one that had more, but Texas also had more quad one losses on the resume. So
right.
I'm sure it was pretty tight between Oklahoma and Texas. Maybe if Texas didn't beat Alabama in the SEC title game, we're talking things a little bit differently, but who knows? Either way,
and that's the thing, you know, that's of note with the bracket and the way things fell. Texas number two, correct? So again, if it all goes chalk, which it, you know, very well might not, that would be a semifinal matchup, which the WCWS bracket is, it's a meandering road. The Omaha bracket is very kind of cut and dry, straightforward. The softball one puts my brain in a pretzel every year because the sides cross. But if they were to just continue to win, then it would be OU and Texas in the semi, not an elimination game, but you get the idea. They could possibly meet earlier than the national championship series. So we'll see. Obviously, a long way to go until then, but fun to think about and kind of look ahead down the road. But look forward to this weekend, and we'll obviously discuss on the show next Monday, however it goes this weekend, with the regional. And we may even be able to get out there for some of these games, but obviously we'll have the full coverage either way on Sooners Illustrated and on the site and on the YouTube. All right, so we mentioned softball's obviously into the tournament starting this week. Baseball is winding down. Final week of the regular season is upon us. Oklahoma with a three-game set against Tennessee at the Brick this week. And they're limping in, Tom. Obviously, you know, it's not been great the last few weeks. Oklahoma lost another series. They dropped 2 out of 3 in Fayetteville over the weekend. They did come back and salvage on Sunday, put up 15 runs yesterday, hit 5 homers. Had to have it, had to avoid the sweep, and they did. Hosting is out. That's not going to happen now. And frankly, Oklahoma, they're in very good shape to make the tournament, so I don't want to, like, you know, doom pod here. But they probably need to make sure to win at least a game against Tennessee. And feel really good, win the series. You know, then you're 100% good. But, you know, it got a little slippery when they lost the first two at Fayetteville. Like, okay, like, you kind of need to get to, like, that 14-15 win mark in SEC play. All of a sudden that was looking like not a given anymore. They got the win on Sunday to avoid the sweep, but you know, just pitching is not in a good spot right now. They've given up a lot of runs, a lot. I was doing the math over the weekend when they lost on Saturday to Arkansas by a final score of 12-8. That was 5 out of 6 losses in SEC play. And in those 5 losses, they were averaging giving up over 12 runs a game. And they gave up 10 yesterday. So it went down technically, but still another big number. Just in a rough spot, and they're giving up so many homers. They're not able to keep teams in the ballpark right now. And offensively, it's been a bit hit or miss. Yesterday, obviously, was great. You put 15 runs on the board. They really needed that. They've had a couple of guys really getting going. Dayton LaChance has been so good for the last, like, month. But obviously, right now, the concern is pitching. They're really struggling to keep the run totals down at the moment. And their offense, solid, but I don't know if it's good enough to win games consistently, you know, 15-10 like they did yesterday. I don't know if that's realistic. But at the end of the day, if you're Oklahoma, you're coming back, not home, but home-ish with Oklahoma City this week. Win the series, hopefully, take a little momentum into the SEC tournament. But obviously, Tom, you know, these SEC offenses, everyone can hit, everyone's got power. And that's been the issue right now, because, I mean, you go back to that Auburn series a few weeks ago, you look at the run totals, I mean, 14, 10, 13, 12, 12, 15, 10 yesterday, excuse me. Like, that's not a recipe for winning a lot of games, giving up runs like that. They got to find a way to bunt some things up on the pitching side right now.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, great that they were able to salvage that series yesterday. I didn't get to watch the game, but I was kind of following along with some of your updates. And sure, you get to those late innings and you're like, this feels like it could be a little, you know, familiar territory for them, but managing to hold on. if they can take two or three this week in OKC, I think they'll feel a lot better.
Not
even seeding wise, but just confidence wise.
Yeah,
to be able to win three of your last four going into the postseason, you'll feel a little bit better because right now, just feels like it's a struggle for them right now. Every single time they're out there.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, the confidence, and that's why winning yesterday was huge, to your point, because, baseball is such a funny thing where it's like when it's rolling, it feels like you're always going to get the big hit or whatever you need, and it's the complete opposite when you're struggling because, on Saturday, and they lose on Friday, they get run rolled on Friday. Awful game. It was bad. LJ McCurry is another rough alley, and they got to find a way to get him right. But Saturday, they're in position to win. They have a lead late in the game, a three-run lead, 8-5 in the eighth inning. Runners on the corners, one out. And it's a line drive hit right at Jackson Willits. They're probably best all-around player. Should have been a double play to end the inning. He can't handle it. They don't get an out, and that opened the door for a seven-run eighth inning where Arkansas flipped an 8-5 game into 12-8. And that, that's just kind of how it's going right now at that point. Like, there you go. Like, we're waiting for the big mistake to happen. And even yesterday, they flipped it on them. Oklahoma, they led 5-0. Arkansas came back to 5-4. Then it was 7-4. Then 7-7. Oklahoma scored seven runs in the seventh. So they put up a seven-run inning, a massive inning. They hit a bunch of homers. But Arkansas started to chip away, started to work back in. They got it back to 14-10. Now they were able to hang on. But it's just kind of like right now, you just need a little bit of mojo back, especially on the mound, because it just seems like the confidence is a little shaken right now. And so, like you said, hosting is out. They're not going to be able to get there into that top 16 anymore. But you still just need to win some games to, A, lock up your position in the tournament and help your seed. But also, to your point, just confidence and some momentum, feeling like you're kind of back playing good baseball. And that just goes to show you how fun it is. And not to say that Sunday would have played out the same way, but they hang on Saturday. Again, they had a 3-1 lead in the eighth. Maybe you win the series and everything feels completely different right now. But unfortunately, that's not how it works, right? So we'll see what happens this week. Again, Tennessee coming to the brick. Going to be very interesting. Curious to see what the crowds look like and how many Tennessee fans are going to be in town. Fun series for both. Both teams should be tournament teams. They're not high-end, ranked teams at the moment. Both will be tournament teams, presumably. Oklahoma and Tennessee, they just won a series against Texas, so they're playing pretty well right now. So fun series coming up at the brick. Thursday, Friday, Saturday coming up this week. So a very, very busy weekend. Softball regional, that's going on. It's also graduation weekend for OU for students. So there's a lot going on in the metro, in the 405 this weekend. But fun series starting on Thursday night at the Brick, and I'll be there for coverage over on Sooners Illustrated. The Sooners Illustrated podcast will be back after this short break. All right, before we get out of here, let's do some hoops as well. I want to kind of go big picture and kind of get into your thoughts because it was kind of brought up on the board, in the last week or so, just like, is this a better team on paper? I want to ask you that. But before we do, let's tidy up some housekeeping with the latest addition to the roster, not a transfer, but a freshman that they have signed from 2026 in Quincy Wadley. It's a four-star guard. This is a really highly touted prospect. This is a top 50 guy for us at 24/7 Sports, top 10 shooting guard, top player in the state of Arizona, one of the top players, I should say. 6'4", kind of a classic, guard, combo guard, maybe, depending on what they kind of look for him in the future. But I guess, Tom, the obvious question first off, I'm not going to expect you to know the complete ins and outs and watched, hours and hours of film on Wadley. But I guess in your mind, the obvious question here with him is this a now addition? Like, does he help the team now, a la like a Jeremiah Fears or something, not to that level, but like that, where they added this freshman, he ended up being a huge part of the team right away when we didn't really know when it happened? Or is it more like what's, I think, believed to be the case with Gage Mayfield, which is probably not now, but in the future? Where are you at with how Wadley fits into the team now?
I think he'll have his opportunities to contribute
early.
I think especially in non-conference play, they'll see where he's at and what they can get out of him. And if things are looking good, I think he'll have a chance to carve out a role probably off the bench when they get to SEC play. It's certainly not a Jeremiah Fears type, even though, he comes in as the highest rated, high school recruit of the Porter Moser era. But he's a guy who can provide a scoring spark off the bench. And I think it's just going to be really interesting to see, because you look at how Porter Moser has handled freshmen over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah Fears is the only guy that he really, really entrusted to like do his thing. Like, you know, 2 years prior, you know, Milo Susan obviously emerged into that starter at guard. Otega Owe played a lot too, but those guys are more the exception than the rule. You know, you look at this past season, like Kai Rogers, he was given some opportunities early and they realized that he wasn't ready to be that guy in SEC play. You know, Alec Blair, one game into the season, goes to play baseball instead. You know, even Kuala Talk the year before, redshirting. God, who else am I forgetting?
Caden Cooper.
Yeah, Caden Cooper the year before that. Just a lot of these guys have redshirted and just haven't really contributed. But I think that, you know, Quincy Wadley has the chance to be a option off the bench and kind of just see how his role evolves as they get into SEC play. But if it really feels like he's going to be more of a guy that's going to, like, they can hand the reins over to as a sophomore while, you know, not needing to lean on him heavily as a freshman, but having his opportunities to be a contributor. Because, you know, we talked about it before, like what this team should look like right now, like what the rotation looks like. And like, you know, the starting five, between Xavier Brown, you know, Darion Reed, Kenai Ruths, Akolda Gack, and who am I forgetting as the two? Pop Isaacs.
Yeah.
Like you know who those guys, you know who those stars are going to be, and then you think, you know, you can have Dayton Forsyth, you know, Tyler Hendricks, and you know, Kai Rogers kind of being your, you know, three main guys off the bench. Like, can Quincy Wadley, you know, fit in there as kind of that, you know, two guard that could maybe handle the ball some, or maybe play some small ball on the wing there. So we'll see. I'm intrigued by it. Obviously, it's a big get for them, you know, beating out Cincinnati and LSU for a top, you know, top 50 prospect like that. But again, like, you look at Porter's track record of freshmen, and it's like, where is he going to fall on that spectrum? Like, certainly he's not going to be on the Jeremiah Fears end, but he's also, I don't envision him being like a Caden Cooper or Kuala Talk. Like, he's going to be a guy that's going to be somewhere in the middle, probably closer to like an Otega Owe was as a true freshman.
Yeah. And is he willing to wait? Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the question with these guys. It's so easy to portal out now. And some guys are willing to wait. I mean, Kai Rogers just had the season that he had and he's back. Right. I mean, some guy, Luke Northweather's a guy who redshirted back once upon a time. You mentioned Kuala Talk. Like, some of these guys are okay with it. Other guys like Caden Cooper, not really, right? I mean, he played a little bit early, didn't really play much conference play that year, and he portaled, right? I mean, so that's the question with Wadley. I tend to agree with you. I think probably what's going to happen is early in the year when they're playing Fairleigh Dickinson and those other bye games, he'll get some run. If he does enough, maybe he gets a little more when conference play rolls around, but you're going to have to really show something because, like you said, they seemingly have the rotation on paper, but he's an exciting player, and you know, we kind of talk about it, you know, here and there. It hasn't really brought up on the show that often, but he only signed one guy, or at least before this, it was only one guy with Gage Mayfield. Kind of would like more than that. Not that it's not like, you know, other sports, you sign a bunch out of high school in a given year. It's only usually a couple or a few, but still would like more than one. And right. So nice to get him with Mayfield, and just to kind of, it never hurts to kind of have a little bit of like something for the future, theoretically, to kind of build with. So I like it, obviously, and I am very interested to see him play, obviously, and all that in due time, but if he can fit in there. And Gage Mayfield, too, for that matter, because I think both of that question's come up, like, are these guys that can help? And the answer is probably not, but, you know, if you go take advantage of it, maybe so. I mean, we'll find out, obviously, in due time. So let me ask you a big picture with Oklahoma right now, just where this roster is. It was brought up on the board. You know, we were kind of talking about it, the two of us. I mentioned Brody Lusk, and also just a number of our VIP members kind of just having a conversation about it. If this is a better team on paper than it was last year, it's hard. I mean, it's tricky because you have to kind of use the fact that you know what the team was last year, because obviously at this time last year, we were talking about this portal class looking awesome, right? I mean, and it in some ways was pretty good. I mean, Nigel Pack certainly had a great year. I think Tay Davis probably didn't have nearly the year that he or we had all kind of hoped he would. Didn't read, did some really nice things. Obviously, Xavier Brown had a pretty nice year. Where are you at with this team in terms of just relative to a year ago? I mean, is this a better roster in your mind than last season? I kind of think it is, but I could be talked into it not also. Where are you at?
I think it should be.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because, look, you're bringing back two starters in Xavier Brown and Darian Reed, and you'd expect them both to be better than what they were at the end of last season and certainly right. at the beginning of last season. So you factor in those things. No, I think one of the bigger questions is, like, which version of Pop Isaacs are you getting? Like, because if you're getting Creighton Pop Isaacs, like, or, you know, early Texas Tech Pop Isaacs, like, you feel a lot better. Right now, I think I'd rather have Nigel Pack than Pop Isaacs. But again, you're still going to be better at point guard with Xavier Brown back for a second year. You're going to be better with Darian Reed at the forward spot than you were last year. You know, can Kenai Ruths develop into what they think he can be? Mm-hmm. Like, can't he be a longer Jalen Moore type who really kind of finds his footing and you know, figures out what he can really be in Oklahoma's system the way Jalen Moore did coming over from Georgia Tech, where, you know, his numbers weren't impressive by any means, but he developed into the leader of that team for basically 2 years. They'll be better at center. You know, again, we've talked about it before. Like, Mo Agee, when he was on, he was really solid, but it was just a matter of, you know, he was inconsistent. He was, you know, stuck in foul trouble a lot of the time. You think that, you know, Akolda Gak should be their best center that they've had under Porter Moser. And then you look at the bench, like Dayden Forsyth, healthy, should be what they thought he could be last year, mm-hmm. but really wasn't when he was dealing with those ankle injuries. You know, Tyler Hendricks, a good 3 and D type of guy that fills that Jadon Jones type of role, you know, and then, you know, see where the freshmen kind of land in that. And then, you know, Kai Rogers, you think that he'll take a step forward in year two as well. So I think this roster should be better. The question is, like, how much better will it be? You know, certainly, you know, like, this is a team that should have been in the NCAA tournament last year if they didn't, you know, squander a couple of opportunities that they had. And a lot of it just comes to, like, how well does this team gel? And again, the expectation should absolutely be making the NCAA tournament, especially with it expanding this year. Yeah. And, you know, I think the conversation is going to change for a lot of coaches with this expansion. Just on a little side note, it's like, okay, more teams are going to make the tournament. So, like, these bubble teams should be in the conversation, but I think there's going to be more pressure on coaches to win a round of 64 game and advance to that second round. So we'll see what they can do, but, you know, if I were to put money on it right now, like, I would bet on this roster being better top to bottom than what it was last year.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. I do think the starting five at the very least should be better. I mean, again, you're assuming that Darian Reed and Xavier Brown are going to be improved versions of themselves. At the very least, they'll be the same, right? I mean, they're not going to get worse. You wouldn't think. I guess that could happen, but you wouldn't imagine it would. You know, Tay Davis, there were such high expectations. Yeah. Before most of them, like, this guy is SEC Defensive Player of the Year and stuff. I mean, he had some nice moments, but I think overall probably wasn't the year that we all kind of thought he was going to have. I agree with you on Pack versus Isaacs. I probably would lean Pack, but we'll see. And I do think they've definitely upgraded at the five, though, with Gak. So, yeah. I mean, you kind of look at it like, I think it's better. You know, and then the bench with Forsyth, hopefully healthy this time. You know, Kai Rogers, can he make a leap in year two to be better than what Kirill Elatonsev was for them? Plus, they also, you know, they added Yak, who I think we talked about a little bit last week. Yeah. You know, they a little big man insurance there at the very least, you know, to where you didn't have the need to add a Russian big man in the middle of the season. They were just kind of in a pinch, like they need another guy. And you shouldn't have that situation this time, I hope. It's an interesting – we talked about it throughout this entire portal. Like, it's a very interesting team. It's a hodgepodge group. But I do tend to think that they have a chance to be pretty good. And like you said, with the they need to be in the tournament anyway. Yeah. But with the tournament expansion, it's a open and shut. Without even an ounce of hesitation, they have to be in it. And we've joked about it. Everyone's joked about it. If this had happened earlier, Oakland would have been in the tournament for the last 5 years with Porter Miller. This – expansion happens sooner, and I'm very interested to go back to your point of kind of the pressure to win a game. Like, what do we consider over time is making the play-in, or I think they're calling it the opening round is the official name of it. Is that going to be looked at over time as making the tournament? Like, I know, like, literally it will be, but are we going to give coaches, like, do you need to make it to Thursday to really feel like you did something?
I think
because
so.
They've widened that net. It's so much easier to make it now. I mean, if you're any good at all in the bubble, you're going to make it, or you should. I mean, so it's a very interesting kind of landscape, shifting move to expand the tournament with those eight extra spots. It's going to make the season very interesting next year. I'm curious to see how that affects just kind of the conversations around some of these teams, including Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think the expectation for a lot of, you know, those fringe teams is going to be to make it to Thursday, Friday, and in probably a lot of cases, making it to Saturday or Sunday. Making the field isn't going to be good enough. Like, you have to show that you can win a game. And I know a lot of the times, like, you know, that March Madness itself is a crapshoot. It's like, it's all about matchups. It's who's getting hot at the right time. But, when the field is expanded like that, like, you need to be in, like, the actual tournament, not these play-in games or make it to that first weekend, really.
Are you ready for the inevitability of Sunday afternoon, you find out that he's playing at 3 o'clock on Tuesday, wherever. They don't even know where these games are going to be played yet. Because obviously Dayton can't house all these. I think Dayton is still going to be involved, but they're going to have a couple other sites to host all these games. It's going to be insane. I don't even know how that's going to logistically. It sounds like a lot, but not my job to figure it out.
I'm trying to recall if I like remember seeing something about like Vegas was preparing to like host some of those opening play-in games or something like that. Like, that makes sense too, just because like they, you know, we saw it with the Crown, like they have the options to host these kind of smaller but still high stakes games in this situation.
Yeah, it's gonna be very interesting. I'm curious to see how it looks. I wish they just left the tournament alone. Obviously, I don't think anyone really wanted them to expand. Yeah. I don't think any fan or media member or anyone who just likes the sport was pro expanding it, but it was inevitable and it's gonna happen, or it's happening for next season. And so it'll be very interesting to see how it looks. It's gonna be odd. And like you said, like, you kind of have to make it. For what it's worth, I think it was Jeff Goodman, I want to say, who reported that, like, ESPN and CBS, all the places that have like a tournament challenge that you fill out your bracket online that everyone does, they're still not going to – it doesn't start till Thursday. So, I think in the public, like, lexicon, I think a lot of people still consider the tournament to not really start until Thursday. So, I think that matters for, like, narratives and stuff. So, I'm kind of with you. I think, like, just getting into that play-in round – like, if Oklahoma makes the play-in round next season and loses, they're not into the Thursday-Friday, I still think that would be looked at as a – pretty big failure, right? I mean, you gotta get into the Thursday, Friday, get into the 64 to really feel like you made it. So we'll see. It's gonna be weird, for sure. I think that's it. We'll be back later this week, Colin and I. I think maybe Thursday or Wednesday. I'm not sure. State tournament baseball this week. I may have to go a day earlier. I'll talk to him about that. But keep an eye out later this week. Again, softball coverage will be all over the site and on the YouTube channel. You can hear from Patty and the team. Whatever, I think they probably have a probably Thursday press conference before they play on Friday, but either way, we'll have the post games and stuff and keep an eye out for that on the YouTube channel. Obviously, full baseball coverage. Then Tom and I'll be back next Monday to wrap it all up, recap it all as we get into kind of the nitty gritty of the Diamond Sports postseason, both softball and baseball, coming up next week with the SEC tournament out there in Hoover. I think that's it for now, though. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you guys next time, right back here as always on Sooners Illustrated.